I'm Tom Gentry, and this is Men Who Talk. It's brought to you by Begin Again Institute, a two-week intensive program for men with intimacy disorders in Boulder, Colorado, where my friend and co-host Ed Tilton is the chief operations officer. Ed and I wanted to have a series of conversations on some of the barriers we see that prevent men from living more authentic lives. We want to underscore the fact that healthy men do talk. We want to help men who often do struggle with intimacy be more true to themselves. And we want to help people who love men maybe understand them a little bit better. So please listen in, subscribe to the show, share this conversation with someone you love, and enjoy Men Who Talk.
I just can't tell you, Tom, how excited I am that this is episode 8. You know, you and I had talked about this vision of what would it be like if we started this clubhouse room and, you know, do you think people would come and what would we talk about, you know, to then kind of creating a content calendar and then people actually showing up.
Yeah.
And now we're at the last episode. So it's been really fun and exciting, and I'm just really honored to share the stage with you.
Well, likewise. And people have come consistently. Yeah. And there are people who showed up in the beginning who I'd never met, who I've seen coming back every week, which tells me, you know, we're on to something. And I feel like I enjoy doing this with you a lot. I feel like we're pretty good together.
Yeah.
You and I both are really passionate about this stuff. And I've been thinking today. So last week we kind of left off with, okay, so we've done 7 of these. Now for the last installment, what are we going to talk about? And Ed made the point that maybe we should talk about what next. Where do we go from here, given everything we've covered? And I think it's beyond just you and I, we. I think what you meant is the collective we as a society who wants to have men who are more connected to themselves and to each other, better fathers, better partners. Where do we go from here? And I was thinking about, I did this podcast episode a while back with David Sauvage, which I think you listened to.
I did.
And it's one of my favorite episodes that I've done. And David's all about emotional literacy. And he's as talented as anyone I've ever met at articulating these ideas in really just understandable ways for anyone, really simplifying psychological concepts. And, you know, he's a guy, and we both kind of nerded out on men emotional literacy stuff. And, he managed to express something very clearly that I have thought of often over the last few years and have talked to you about this idea. And that is that as men who are invested in men being more connected to their emotions and more balanced and just better men, one of the things that will eventually be required of us if we're ever gonna like really make any substantial progress in this way is that those of us who are here inviting other people into the conversation we're going to have to fight for it. And I think that's really true. And I think that's a good place for us to start the conversation, Ed. What do you think?
I think that's a great place to start the conversation. You know, I think that there's and part of it is for me, you know, and it's kind of interesting because we've laid down so many different topics that all kind of relate to each other, and we did that with intention. But I think that as we look to the future, we kind of have to revisit some of these past episodes of like, how can we put down aspects of our competitive nature to form a combined collective for this fight? We're going to have to give up some of the, in order for us to win, I think we got to surrender some of the ideas of, some of us have to surrender more toxic masculinity than others, but I think that there has to be kind of an understood goal and objective. In terms of how will we know that we're making progress? But maybe I've already kind of gone too far down the rabbit hole.
So some of us will need to surrender some of our toxic. What do you mean by that when you say that? What are you talking about? Like, what do you need to sacrifice?
That's a good question. You know, I need to sacrifice my desire to figure it out on my own for whatever reason. You know, that there's, I'm a work in progress, but if I were to say an area of improvement for me would be, you know, when I understand that I'm in pain or that I'm hurting, to ask for help. That would be mine. That'd be the first thing.
Yeah. So I think what I would need to surrender, this is an interesting point you made, and something good to talk about. What I need to surrender is my hostility towards or in relative intolerance toward other men who have no interest in having this conversation. And to try to be more understanding of those men and to try to think of another angle, another way to reach them that maybe I haven't thought of yet, instead of like in my mind sort of condemning them. Which to me is sort of a, I don't love that idea of letting go of that, because I get, when I see some, like what I think of as really stupid comments that some men make, or the guys out there on social media talking out their ass about what, how men should be and how women should be and how women should let men be men and all this, it gets me going. It gets my blood boiling, and it sort of evokes this passion that I have inside me to do what we're doing now and to write about it. So it's like, I know I need to be more accepting and more tolerant and more understanding and all that, but I don't, I want to keep the passion, you know? Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, and I think that that's, I feel like that's part of being a man, is like having a quest, having a journey, having a problem that we have to solve. And I think for guys like you and me, and I'm assuming, you know, other men in this room, one of the biggest problems that we've encountered is maybe being misjudged or mislabeled or not being the us that we want to be, you know, and some of that can be, you know, cultural or societal or, you know, just experiential because of the experiences that I've had. I feel like I'm
going to stop you for a second. Give me an example of what you're talking about. So I think I know what you're talking about.
In terms of the journey that we're on, or
in terms of ways you've fallen short of being the man who you want to be, that's where you're going, right?
Yeah. So I'll give some examples of some of the stuff that I unfortunately kind of believed growing up, and that was that in order to be an acceptable man, you had to have a certain physique. You'd have a certain body type. Women had to want to be around you. Guys had to want to be with you. You know, you had to have a good group of guy buddies. And that you had to be, you know, smart and charming. And that all would lead to power and influence, either financially or organizationally. You either had to be the owner of a company or you had to make enough money to own a company. And that if I did these things, happiness is a byproduct of that success.
And you're regarded as a man because of it.
Absolutely. And so from like a socialization piece, you know, I was socialized, and this is how it played in for me, is every time I got to the age where you were able to have a job, people would ask that first. Mm-hmm. When they meet you, well, what do you do for a living? And nobody ever asked me, you know, or I can't remember anybody asking me, well, how much do you make doing that living? But there was always kind of a dotted line between the two, right? It was like, you know,
sizing you up.
Right. It was, you know, and for those that don't know, I've had some pretty interesting jobs, you know, that fell short of that, you know, that ivory tower that I was kind of working for. And so I spent a lot of time feeling like I was not a man.
Hmm.
I wasn't man enough. And so in order to get that little extra influence or courage or, you know, whatever it is that I was working on, I would do things that were just so out of character until eventually, you know, I was so out of character with addiction that I needed a whole reset.
Whole life makeover.
Yeah. You know, I remember once I was with people in a place where guys reset their lives, and the conversation of like rehabilitation was coming up, and you know, there was like, you know, you got to rehabilitate. This buddy of mine looks and he goes, I've realized one thing while I've been here. And he says, I need to be habilitated. Because I don't think there's anything about what I understand from a healthy perspective. Mm-hmm. It's not like I understood healthy relationships and then I chose to have unhealthy relationships. And then now I'm going to go back. He's like, because clearly nothing about what I was doing was working. And that was something that stuck with me. Hmm. You know, and I think that this happens for a lot of men, which is, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the Matrix and Morpheus and the red pill and the blue pill is like, I think so oftentimes from a socialization perspective of being a man, you don't even realize that you're doing it until somebody points it out. Hmm. You know, and I think kind of going back to the initial piece, I'd like to change my answer, which is the moment of realization is when we have to start to fight.
Realization of what?
The realization that there's another alternative to living in the way that we've been living. Hmm. Once that piece is discovered, it's really uncomfortable. Yeah, it was a lot easier to be ignorant of the fact that, like, what I was getting wasn't good enough. And if I was going to be able to give what others needed in our lives together, relationally, I had to change. Hmm.
Like you had to have what you needed first.
Right. Because I can't transmit what I don't have. But nobody told me that I had to do that before I started getting into relationships.
Yeah.
You know, so unfortunately, I'm going around having a lot of unhealthy relationships.
Because your relationship with yourself is fractured.
Right. And the people that I'm bringing into my life can see this. And for me, this is something that I thought, I mean, it's something that stuck with me for a long time. That was attractive to them. Hmm. You know, so in order for me to change the people that I connected with, I had to change myself, because changing myself put me in a different headspace. It put me around different people. It put me with an attraction to change. Hmm.
So when you say that was attractive to people, what you're talking about that was attractive was your conformity to the sort of cultural notion of what it means to be a man.
Yeah.
One of the conclusions that I've come to, and you've heard me say this a lot, is you mentioned feeling like a man or not feeling like a man. Mm-hmm. And this is something I talk about a lot with guys that I work with, is this, sort of fact that if we're really honest with ourselves, deep down, a lot of times I have felt more like a little boy than like a man. And that is not an uncommon phenomenon.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to move past that. And it still pops up occasionally in certain areas of my life. But there's all this ambiguity sort of about what it means to be a man or what it means to be a good man. And certain people, you know, people have their own ideas. They're usually pretty subjective. And I would argue almost always based on what your father modeled as manhood. Yeah. and not anything that's really any more thoughtful than that. It's like there's a really, it's sort of rooted in emotion. It's an emotional response kind of thing. But one of the things I've learned is that sort of insecurity of not really feeling like a man is where a lot of toxic behavior, or, you know, what is labeled as toxic masculinity, I think that's where it originates. Like guys are trying to, you know, validate their manhood outwardly and be perceived as men because they're afraid they're not men. I think there's a lot of that. So I think it's really important to feel like you're a man.
Yeah.
To have that groundedness and that confidence that I am a man. And in entertaining this question over the years of what does it even mean to be a man? The conclusion I drew is that's the wrong question. The real question for me isn't what does it mean to be a man? The question is, what does it mean for me to be a man?
Yeah.
For me to feel like a man. And I think one of the things that needs to happen in order for as men collectively to improve in this area is that we have to be less attached to what other people think.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've talked about in this about how, you know, you would kind of think that a man feeling like a man is sort of dependent on how he's viewed by women in a lot of cases, but that's not really true. It's almost always how we feel in relation to other men. You know, that's where that really comes from. So we need, you know, we need other men, but I know for me, like, it's always been very important. And my parents really, like, instilled this in me to be my own person, think for myself. And I think being my own man, the man, what I believe about what it means to be a good man, to live that and not be too caught up in what the world thinks a man is or should be, or a quote unquote real man, which is like when I meet people who use that, it's like a huge red flag to me. Like, you know, if he was a real man, he would have, or blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I think what we really need from other men is to feel connected with other men. So that's kind of the challenge, finding other men who are capable of that. And, you know, it's like, it reminds me of how our friendship began, because, you know, we got to talking, we got to know each other a little bit. And once I realized that we were on the same page with this stuff, it was invigorating and like a joyful thing to know that there was another man out there who, you know, I could connect with in this way. It's like, you're important to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the same way.
And you know, it was, I don't want to say it was like finding a needle in a haystack, but, you know, it kind of was. Because, I mean, you and I both know men who are on this, you know, a little further along on this continuum than most. But then, you know, there are parts of the further along the continuum where some guys just don't want to go. They don't want to talk about male privilege.
Yeah.
They don't want to talk about codependency. They don't want to talk about how patriarchy undermines manhood rather than solidifying it.
Right.
There's only so far that they can go. So finding you was like finding a needle in a haystack. But, you know, just the value of being understood by another man for me is huge.
Yeah.
It is. Because, you know, the men in my world, like, I can't have conversations like this with my brothers. I could never have conversations like this with my dad. To some extent, you know, where it's age appropriate, I can have conversations like this with my son. But he's not there, and he might never be where we are in this country. He might not care, you know. Some guys don't care about all this shit, you know. they just want to do their thing. But I do, you know. Part of what comes up for me as we're having this conversation is, are we wandering so far out on a limb that we've lost people? So I hope that isn't the case. But I think we've touched on a couple really important things about how to push the boulder up the hill, right?
I think one thing when we're talking about what now, and I think you did a perfect job to talk a little bit about our relationship, you know, that there is this piece that you and I both have been able to talk openly about having mentors in our life, having other men that, as you put it, were farther along in the journey. And I think that that's part of the, if you're listening to this and like, what's the takeaway? You know, and I think part of the takeaway is having the openness to accept people in our lives in this manner, and also to ask for acceptance into other people's lives in this manner. Because it's really easy to look at somebody and go, you know, they're really busy. And I think there's a phrase that I say a lot, which is, you know, there's no wrong way to go through life, but there is like the easy way. You know, and the easy way presents itself in a lot of really convenient opportunities. And like you said, there are guys out there that just, the change presents itself and they just go, hard pass. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep living the way I've been living. And I think that for those that don't choose the easy way, but choose the meaningful and the deep and the connection, don't do it in silence. You know, because Tom, had you not said the things, you know, had you not have been as open and took a risk in talking to me, and just so everybody in the audience knows, like, Tom and I met in a professional setting across what would we say? What's the difference between Colorado and Florida?
Couple thousand miles.
So, I mean, there was really, you know, something in both of us that said like, hey, this person is safe enough to go out on that limb with. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, having the conversations that we have had has inspired me to reach out to other men in the same way that you and I have connected. And I don't want to say like indoctrinate or any of those things, but similar principles and values in our relationship, which is making time for each other, calling each other just because we're thinking of each other. You know, there've been plenty of times where I've called you and said, this is really crazy, but I just was like thinking about you and I know you're kind of going through this, or and vice versa.
Hmm. Or it's, you know, it feels like it's been too long since we've connected.
Right. Because I think that a lot of men will gloss over that and say, I've got some buddies and we don't talk, but maybe once every 3 years. But when we talk, it's like nothing has ever changed.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times the question we should ask ourselves is like, if it's such a great feeling, if it's such a great connection, why would we only make space and time for it once a year?
Well, here's another thing that happens with this. I think that probably happens a lot. Like, I love being around Ed. So, Ed and I talk and we hang out when we get a chance. And, you know, I haven't had a chance to hang out with Ed in a while. What's Ed's problem? Dude, what's wrong with you? Where have you been? Like, what, you know, hassling you? I mean, guys, I think guys react like they take it personally that, well, he's got his head up his wife's ass and he never makes time for us anymore. When the feeling, if you're connected to the feeling, it's, I miss you.
Right.
But, you know, when you take it in a hostile direction, like that doesn't help anything.
Right.
But then that's kind of the importance, I think, of the relationship with yourself and the relationship with your emotions, to kind of breathe and ask yourself, what's really going, what am I feeling here? Ed's not doing anything wrong. Ed's got a life. He's got two little kids. He's got a job that's really intense. And we spend as much time together, every opportunity we get, we talk, you know, like it's you get the point. I interrupted you.
Well, but I think that there's a key piece that you made, which is a lot of times we will feel more like little boys than men.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what that sounds like. That's what that narrative sounds like. Because that's what little boys will do. You know, little boys will make a narrative.
If you don't hang out with me, you're not my friend anymore.
Yeah, like, you're not invited to my birthday party, Tom. Right. You know, and it's a way of saying, I think the idea of saying, I miss a relationship requires an intimate understanding that there is a relationship of value here. And there's something, there's a reason that this is connected to a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, we just want to attribute it to a behavior.
Yeah.
But like you said, Ed's you know, Ed's whipped,
right?
And he spends all his time with his wife. That's like an Ed problem,
right?
You know, as opposed to just holding that space and not reacting out of the little boy wound. Because there's a lot of times where like that'll happen with me, where I'll start to make a narrative. And sometimes I got to remind myself, I'm not 10 anymore.
Right.
Like, if I messed up, what's going to be sillier, trying to like lie and manipulate and cover it up, and, or just being like, I'm really not proud of what happened, but this is where we're at.
Well, and this whole thing, it goes back to the Bell Hooks book that I've talked about sporadically throughout this thing. There's a need that we have to recognize that's not getting met or that we need to have met. And it's a need for love. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Love, acceptance, being heard, being seen. That stuff's, it's really satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the relationship you and I have is really satisfying. And, you know, what's scary about it, I think, for guys who maybe haven't had that or want that, is that it requires reciprocation.
Yeah.
Like it won't work if one of us is there and the other isn't. We both have to be there.
Yeah.
But the only way you're going to find out is if you take the risk. You know, you're willing to give of yourself and trust and see what happens, right? And if we want this, if we want to feel connected in this way, it's like anything else in life, we have to put ourselves out there and take that risk.
Yeah.
If we're not open to it, and if we're not willing to take a risk, we're not going to find this, and we need it. It's a need, right?
I think it goes to that place of most men, and this isn't my quote, but this is the place of quiet desperation. This is the place where, as I call it, covert depression thrives. You know, the guys that have convinced themselves that they don't require, you know, that they don't require connection and you know, commitments and authenticity and affection, they're the guys that have started to accept living a life of depressed expectations.
Mm. Well, and Robert Bly would talk about it as like an absence of vitality.
Right.
That's what this kind of connection gives me. Right? It's invigorating.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I mean connection with myself, the ability to connect with you and people like you, to have deeper connection. I mean, you know, there are people in this room who I love, but I never would have figured it out or had that if I wasn't willing to show up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's an important part of this, is just, you know, the willingness to put yourself out there as a guy and to really be who you are and let people see who you are.
Well, and it falls back into this piece that you said before, is like also kind of letting go of the idea that other people's perception of me make up my self-worth. You know, that if I try to make friends with five people and four of them say no, that I discount the one that says, you're my person.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm more worried about the masses.
Well, which really boils down to, I don't feel like a man.
Right.
Because if you feel like a man, it doesn't matter. Right?
Right. If I feel, and like you said, you know, I feel confident in the man that I want to be, in the man that I am. You're stoked to find that one, you know. I mean, you and I have talked about this before, of like, we have a lot of people that know us. We have a lot of people that we hang out with, but we have a pretty close circle of friends that it's like, they really understand me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it makes it so much easier, you know, for those that don't know, you know, sometimes my job requires me to go to, you know, work events or things of that nature. And it also allows me the opportunity to get invited to a lot of these things. But in doing this work, I'm completely confident in saying, like, I know who I am and I know what I bring to the table, and I don't need to go to this dinner, or I don't need to go to this event, you know, as opposed to like chasing acceptance from strangers.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because, I was talking to Dr. Thomas today.
Oh yeah.
Who was one of our colleagues who Ed connected me with initially. Really sort of incredible clinician and awesome human being who, you know, since then I've become very friendly with, and we kind of keep up with each other. She's in Wisconsin and I'm in Indiana, which is a new thing for me. I moved here from Florida, where I was living and working for 25 years. And in my little professional bubble there, people kind of either know me or know who I am, right? They know me or know of me. And I feel like I've earned a good reputation. And if somebody doesn't think a lot of me, they're generally people who don't have a lot of credibility. Anyway, my point is, I'm in an entirely new place. And I have colleagues all over the country and all over the world who I'm connected to. But like almost none of them are in Indiana. So I'm, for the first time in years, I'm meeting people, walking into rooms where people haven't even heard of me.
Right.
Which is, I mean, and I'm, you know, I mean, you know, this is, I feel like weird even talking about this, but it's true, right? I mean, like people know who I am in our world.
I mean, I knew who you were, and I live in Colorado.
Yeah. So it's, but the fact that I don't, that doesn't bother me. There was a time when I would have felt really insecure about something like that, or really felt like I needed to prove myself to these people somehow. But, you know, being where I am and having done this kind of work, like, I would like them to know me. I look forward to them getting to know me and vice versa. But it doesn't really have any relevance in terms of my value as a professional or as a human being. I don't need it. I don't need that validation. And that feels really good. That feels good. So one, I want to talk about one more thing a little bit here before we open up the stage. And I'm excited about that. I want people to come up and hear what people have to say. But, you know, this whole idea of men connecting with each other, being seen and heard. And I do this men's group once a week. And I've been thinking about it a lot lately because I got a call from this therapist in private practice like a month ago. And he's somebody who I've known for a few years. He recently became a therapist. And I've watched him like online on social media. He's doing an incredible job of promoting himself. He came up with a great name for his practice, and he's done a lot of men's work, and he wants to do men's groups, and he's been promoting them, and nobody's coming. And somebody told him to call me because of how I've been successful at being able to put together and maintain a men's group, like a small group of men where we talk about our shit, you know, like for real, like cry if we need to, all of it. And in the world that Ed and I sort of function in, I mean, there are areas of life where there are men's groups that, like church and places like that, where men, you know, meet all the time and continue to meet for years. But in our little world, when a therapist or somebody out there puts together a men's group, it might meet for 12 weeks and they might get half as many people as they want to come. They might get none. It's hard to do and it's hard to maintain. And I have this group that I've been doing now for about 3 years. We've met every Monday. Now and then, if it's a holiday or something like that, we won't meet. But it's like sacred to them. And me too. I shouldn't exclude myself. And I think I've been really careful about who to bring in. And they've been really pleased with that, how I've kind of curated the group, making sure people fit. But really, my criteria for it, or criterion really, was if you're going to do this, you're going to be committed to it. This isn't like try it out for a month. You know, you can come for a week and see what you think, but you know, and I don't bring them in without the other guys knowing. But if you're going to do this, this isn't the kind of thing where you come for a little while and you don't come anymore. If you're going to come, if you want to be a part of this, you need to be committed to it because we are committed to each other. And I think that's the most important part of it. You know, there's flexibility, like every guy's not there every week. A lot of them are dads with big families and, you know, jobs where, you know, they can't be there every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern. But they're there unless they can't be there. And they can't always be there right at 5. But if the best they can do is be there at 5:15, they show up at 5:15. And it's a group of guys that are going through pretty hard stuff in life, relationship stuff, parenting stuff, professional, you know, challenges, scorn in some cases, like public scorn, all kinds of stuff. But it's magic, man. You know, they love each other. You know, if they need to shed tears among each other, they do. They show up for each other. They stay connected to each other. And, you know, I mean, for the guys in here, find something. And if you can't find it, create it. And if you need help figuring out how to create it, let's talk about it. I'll tell you, you know, what I've done. And how it's worked for me, and what has worked for me and what hasn't. But, you know, they're committed to it and also they're real. Like nobody's showing up there half-assed. Maybe sometimes they're not quite ready to talk about what's going on and it might take a couple weeks to get them to really talk about it, but they do. They talk about hard stuff to talk about. And it's met with love and acceptance. And we need that so much as guys. So anyway. Glenn, how you doing?
How are you, Tom?
I'm doing well.
Yeah, I just tried to leave comments as I heard them, you know, to rely on my memory, and just there were different points you made along the way that were good, like the depth point, you know, depth. You got, if you don't go deep,
yeah,
then you don't go anywhere. That's really important. And there's just that kind of thing resonated with me. I've had good fortune for most of my life to have those kinds of close relationships. So, you know, it's been a gift, and I've been really fortunate with it, and I've tried to help other people as much as I can in my own capacity. But anyway, so I just wanted to say that those are the kind of relationships that you've got to have in your life. You don't form completely. If you don't have close bonds with other guys, it just can't be fully formed from my perspective. You're missing out a big chunk. And I think in order to grow, it's really important. So, I guess it's kind of like the board to jump off of for most guys would be just to think about, you know, the best friendships they've had with other guys. It can help them to kind of filter out some of the things that can help them move forward. And, you know, you're on to something there. So I think you really need to keep it going. There's not too many of us out here, but I think it's still the right way to go. And I think that you've heard the expression where when you get 1% on board, then everything takes off. You got to get to your 1%. Just keep going. That's my 2 cents worth so far.
Well, thank you, Glenn. Thanks for coming up. If anybody else wants to come up, if you want to comment on what we've talked about today or through the whole series, also want to know, like, would you guys like to see us keep doing this? Do you have thoughts on what you'd like to hear us talk about? What maybe did we miss? Always love having feedback from the women, too, to hear what they think about all this stuff. Ezra, how you doing?
Man, I'm great. I'm doing good, man.
Okay, so Ezra, you've been here sporadically through this. What have you picked up on? What was noteworthy to you about what you've heard here in this room?
That's a good question. I think overall, it's just been the deep diving into the reasons, the important reasons for men to connect and be intimate and vulnerable with each other. And just period, the importance of, really working through any of the toxicity that we carry around as men, that causes us to respond and react in ways that are not healthy or beneficial, that don't serve us or anyone else for that matter. Again, like you said, sporadically, but every time, like just the energy alone, of men talking together and not just surface stuff, but really deep diving, just the energy alone, I think is super important to continue to have, and hold space for, and it not be a, sporadic thing. It's something that for me that I realize, that I desire to have, as much as possible throughout the week. It's something that, that really, I think Glenn hit it on the head. Like we as men don't truly move into true maturity and show up as our best selves, in all of its glory and all of our glory, unless we are in fellowship and communication and relationship with other healthy men. It's so easy for us to latch and to have those kinds of relationships with women only. And that's because, you guys talked about, another one that I was sporadically in, talked about, men having to feel like they need to compete with each other. And so it's easy to just skip past the whole competition piece and just be friends with women. And, there's nothing like another brother's perspective on something, especially a cat who you know is healthy and you guys are on the same journey. And, just period. Even if you're not healthy, it's still important to have and bounce things off of men, because hopefully eventually it'll move towards a more healthy place. But just having men in your life is just so important. And I think that, to your question about, do I want to hear more of it? Absolutely, bro. I need it every day. I desire it every day. I know on a platform like this, you know, that's a little bit more tricky, but just in my personal life, I would love to have a space to pop into every day, even just for like 30 minutes. I met a guy recently, like he just moved here in November, and I just met him a few weeks ago. And he's obviously, you know, have had and participates in relationships with other men, because he did something that I would never do. He was, you know, we were talking, he and his wife were talking, and, you know, you could tell there was some energy flowing there, and it was cool. And he asked me, you know, what did I do? And then ultimately invited me to go rock climbing with him. Now, for me and myself, I have had those kinds of conversations with other men, and then that would be the end of it, right? With good intentions, of course, when the conversation happened, but just never really making the time or finding time or feeling like doing it. This guy reached out to me, and I went rock climbing with him on Sunday. And then he invited me to something else this coming Friday. So, you know, he's obviously used to and has stepped into many relationships with other men. And I just really, you know, it feels good. It's a little bit uncomfortable because I haven't until recently been intentional about developing and forming relationships with other men. And, you know, I've appreciated all the conversations that I've been able to hear, and also that you guys recorded it, because it's something that's a priority for me to go and listen to. But anyway, I will, I'll mute for now. But as far as this topic is concerned, I could talk about it for hours. I could be in conversation with it for hours, back and forth, bouncing things, especially with me, like, you know, you and Ed. So that's what I got to say for now, man.
Thank you, Ezra. And Ezra's another guy who, like I was saying before, had I not shown myself, put myself out there, I wouldn't have known that Ezra and I are like on the same page. Because, I mean, I love this dude. We don't talk all the time, but man, you know, I feel connected to him. And when we do talk, we talk. It's real.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's valuable. But, okay, so, Ed, so this is something you and I talked about doing in one way or another for a long time. And part of the reason it's taken so long is just the stuff you had going on in your life, right? And, but we got here.
Yeah.
And I feel like the timing was right. And I feel like the name of the show and sort of the angle that we've taken with these conversations is the one we needed to arrive at. So, you know, the $60,000 question, do you have time to keep doing this? What do we do? Do we keep doing a room at 4:30 Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday afternoons, or what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely. It's been something that I've really looked forward to. You know, in the week and in the day, in order to make the change, we're going to have to fight for it. And I think in this case, it probably is asking people that have enjoyed the room to share it, and to invite other people into the room as well. As much as self-promotion is not really a thing that I'm always comfortable with, it's always something that, you know, it's a vital part to sustaining something like this.
Here's the other thing, just to give you a little context. You know, this is like our first crack at this. And it was important to us to not only have rooms that were interactive, but to record it and to have it be a podcast and it's sponsored. So, you know, we kind of needed to find our feet with this. So I probably didn't promote it as much as I would have if I knew where we'd get with it, you know? And also, like, I've been reluctant to bring too many people into the conversation because, you know, just the nature of it, doing the podcast, an 8-episode season, needing to stay focused on our topics. And also, Ed and I have a pretty good rapport, so not to, you know, throw a wrench in that. That's been the other thing that I've wanted to be careful about. So what do you think, Ed? What do you know, if we keep doing it, where do we go in terms of topics, and what would you like to see happen? Because if we really want to get a lot of people here, we need to get other guys on stage.
Yeah.
Have them be so people see it, you know?
Yeah.
And put your call out to guys who have those good relationships already or can share something. You know, like I'd love, now that I've heard you today, I'd love the opportunity going forward to share some of the things I've discovered, like in my experiences and, you know, and any day, and different every day, right? Like tomorrow I might be in a different mood and I might think of something else, or, you know, some of the harder stuff might come out on my worser days. Today I'm feeling pretty good. So, but today the fact that I'm feeling pretty good is useful too, right? Because timing, it's just, I don't think anything happened by chance. Now that's just me. But having that kind of belief can also give me energy to help out too, right?
Yeah.
Even if others don't, you know what I mean, right?
Well, another thing that's motivated me to do this, Ed will confirm, is that I've been in a lot of rooms where this was sort of the topic. Men, men's issues, men in relationships, and some of them are enormous and worldwide. And I've consistently said to Ed, we can do way better than this. Right. And because I think what I've observed, it's frustrating to me because I am inclined to go deeper. And it's like I find myself in a lot of these rooms on Clubhouse about men and manhood and men in relationships. It's like they get right on the verge of cracking something wide open like a vein of gold. And then somebody changes the subject. Or somebody else talks or you know, it's like it doesn't quite get there. So it's frustrating to me, you know? So I think we have a little bit of a formula that we need to try to stick with. But Glenn's point about bringing in another guy, like maybe have a guy kind of talk about his experience with this for a few minutes and then us do our thing, something like that.
I think that's a great idea.
I know for me, romantic relationships is where I've started learning about this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Relationships that most people would label as failed relationships, which in hindsight, I don't look at it that way, you know, like,
no,
because I've learned so much. I wouldn't be who I am had I not gone through a divorce.
Yeah.
Had I not become a father, and had I not, like, had a very painful subsequent relationship, you know, and, you know, I've talked to you about this stuff too, you know about all of it, but
yeah,
I think that's, I think if guys are really, or they're willing to show up and talk about in a really brave and transparent way where they've struggled in romantic relationships, I think that could be something really special. A good place to start, you know, a conversation. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the formula of bringing other guys up here. I think that's great. And I also, you know, you hit on it earlier, but you know, it's worth repeating of I don't want to go so far down the rabbit hole that we don't hear from the women in the rooms and in our lives, you know, in terms of like, what are some of their questions or aha moments or experiences that really shaped a different understanding of the men in their lives.
Mm-hmm. I know for me, the hardest part about this going forward is coming up with a topic every week.
Yeah.
That's going to be the difficult part. So
just a suggestion, you could have, you know, part one, part two of topics. That helps to.
Oh, yeah.
It helps to do a little deeper dive just for sake of, you know, maybe the first part of it you may not have as much time for. And the second part, you make more time for it. So, or part three.
Thank you. Yeah. That's great, Ezra. I appreciate it. Jennifer, thanks for coming up. We want to hear what you have to say.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me up. This is the first time I've been in this room. I've seen every time that you started this room because I follow you. And so, but because of the title, I'll just be 100% transparent. Because of the title, I didn't think this was a room open to females. And so today was my first time to listen in, and I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. The vibe in this room is completely different. And I don't know if it's that it's led by all men or what. It's a different vibe for me, which I enjoyed. And I loved the conversation, and I found it interesting because when you and Ed were talking about not as men not being seen and heard and having your feelings reciprocated, I thought that was so interesting because if this was reverse roles where, say, Jenna, myself, and Chelsea were having this conversation, it would be very similar. And so I was like... So interesting that I'm sitting here listening to these men talk about their feelings, be very vulnerable, honest, and open. And they're saying the same types of things that we would be saying if this was our room and we were talking about females. And so I thought that was really interesting. And I was trying to connect the dots of why is it so hard for men and women to relate to each other in that aspect? Does it have to do with, belief systems, you know, from 100 years ago where the men are supposed to be masculine and the women are supposed to be all feminine. And so, you know, we're just still sifting through that, or, you know, I found my mind wandering, like, how can we be so similar yet we can't connect in that same area? And then another part that I found interesting was, the relationship with your dads. So, you know, the same thing for us as women, I have found myself, I've been working really hard on the relationship that I have with myself for the past couple of years. And I have come to realize that my dad is an emotionally available person, and that probably comes from his upbringing, you know, and so he is that way by nature. And in all of the relationships in my lifetime with men, I have always chosen a man who is emotionally unavailable, just like my father. So when you were talking about the relationships that you have with your father, again, very similar in our aspect, but for whatever reason, like connecting male and female on those points seems to be so hard.
Mm-hmm. I love that you made that point. That you see the similarities, because so the first episode we did was just what's intimacy in the first place. Let's start there. And then the second episode was on one of my big points that I try to drive home to people, and that's that emotions are not gender dependent. We all have emotions. And what I believe about what you're saying and why it's difficult is because as men, we are socialized to believe that we're not supposed to feel. And if we do feel, then we're being like women, which is something we are taught we should never do, right? You know, so guys go through life pretending not to have emotions.
Yeah. And women are naturally looking for a man who can relate to her emotions. So, you know what I mean? It's just like, I get really frustrated thinking about it, how close we are to wanting the same exact things, but we just can't get there.
Well, but it's also multifaceted, because another thing that I think we probably touched on, and I think part of what men need to understand about emotions and connecting to them and expressing them is, especially with our partners, is, you know, if you're my wife, Jennifer, and I come to you and I have a total meltdown and I'm crying and, you know, I mean, that's unattractive, right? Like, that's a turnoff. But if I come to you and say, listen, I just need you to know that I've been moody lately because I have all this stuff going on at work and I'm dealing with it. And I just want you to know, I don't want you to think it's you. Something like that, where I'm okay. You know, I'm not fragile. I'm not falling apart. And I'm in a secure place articulating my emotions to you. That's way different than coming to you like a 3-year-old reaching for his mommy. And I think that's what we need to learn how to do as guys, right? And if we don't talk to other guys, that's never going to happen. It's just not.
Yeah, I think that is exactly, you know, what Jennifer described is exactly two things. One is, that's exactly why it's so important that men talk to other men. Because the second point is, what we end up doing is finding a woman who really wants to bring that out in us, who really wants to hear. We finally let our guard down because she's presented as safe. So we do open up to her, but we still don't do it with other men. So essentially what we've done is we're using the person in our life, the female, the woman in our lives, to fill a role that for our souls, for our hearts, we were designed to be filled by other men. And that's why there's stress, and that's why there's resistance sometimes in relationships. And it's because you're trying to find it. You're trying to fill a role that's not meant for you to fill. It's meant for another man to fill. And I think that is super important to point out. And because I've seen it play out in my life, you know, most of my life until recently. But yeah, that's all I want to add.
Oh, yeah. I mean, could you imagine if we navigated the world with safety the same way that we navigate relationships with safety? Like, once you find that safe person, like you're saying, Ezra, like, once I find that safe person, I'm just going to only talk to that person. I'm only going to share with that person at that level. It would be like only staying in one room of your house because you like the lighting, but never leaving the house. You know, it's like, yeah, it's
a great analogy.
So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done. And that's why, I mean, that's one of the reasons why Jennifer, you coming up on stage and saying what you did, just that's why we're here.
Yeah, it means a lot to me. Thank you for doing that. And I pinged you which I haven't done before because what I was saying before, because I haven't really pinged anybody because I wasn't sure how this whole thing was going to go. And also we're recording and, you know, I was just more focused on that. But yeah, so we'll keep doing it, right?
Yeah, we'll keep doing it. We just got to figure out a...
Well, you and I can talk.
Yeah.
And come up with the few topics.
I don't know if I even shared this with you, Tom. My wife actually surprised me with a trip to Hawaii.
You did tell me that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So where are the kids going to be?
Parents are coming in town.
Good.
So it'll just be... It'll be the adults.
Wow.
Heading to Hawaii.
Well, you deserve it.
You know? Thanks, buddy.
You do. And one of the things that I know I'm not the only one who has enjoyed this, but just when you show up in rooms on Clubhouse and you're cooking dinner or wrestling with your daughter or, you know, I mean, it's just, I love it, man. I do.
Oh, thanks.
It makes me proud of you and happy for you because that's what being a sober dad has given me, like being able to be present in those moments. And one of the best things that happened to me before my son was born, I had this guy who he was like the business manager, the finance guy of this company I was running at the time. And I would talk to him like four or five times a day, and he was 20 years my senior. So he already had kids who were in high school, and this is going back a while, 15 or so years ago. And my ex-wife was pregnant with my son, and we talked about like almost every day how excited I was to become a dad. And, one of the things he said is just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Enjoy it and savor it. And so it really put me in the frame of mind from the very beginning of being present in the moment. And I created that habit for myself. And it's like, you know, daily. With my son, at some point, I would always think, oh my God, how lucky am I to be this kid's dad? I love him so much, you know, and it's, and even now, like when I see him, you know, things are different, but it's just being amazed by him.
Yeah.
And also articulating that to him. That's another important thing. You know, to let him know how much I love him and let him know how proud I am of him and how much it matters to me that I get to be his dad, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And I, you know, I love that we can talk about dad stuff too. And I am happy for your kids that they get to have you as a dad.
No, thanks, buddy.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, folks. We'll keep you posted. We'll try to do a little bit better job of promoting this thing. We'll be back soon. God bless. We'll see you around. Thanks for joining.
Be a man. Dress for success. Wear the pants of the relationship. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Give the shirt off your back, but don't lose your shirt. Are you really going to wear that shirt? Be a man. Be a ladies' man. Be the man at home. Make a man out of that kid. Sometimes you have to manhandle a situation to show them you're the man. Act like a man. Be the man at the gym. Is that all you can lift? Man up. Whoops. Man down. Be a man. Carry on. Carry your weight. Carry your water. Carry the ball across the goal line. Be a man. Take a chance. Take a risk. Take the job. Take the money. Don't take more than you give. Don't take any crap. Be a man. Be the man at your job. Work like a man. Be successful. Hustle. A hardworking man is a happy man. Never send a boy to do a man's job. Be a man. Take it seriously. Take a joke. Never let him see you sweat. Drink like a man. Smoke like a man. Fight like a man. Be a man. Tough it out. Don't cry. Don't complain. Don't worry. And don't trust doctors. Diet like a man.